Good evening. I call to order the Cassell County Board of Supervisors meeting. If everybody please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America, Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First thing we have tonight are a couple presentations. First of all, is Sergeant Eggener here from Oakdale? I think we'll be postponing this one presentation and call for a second presentation tonight. Dr. Walker?
Good evening. John Walker, Stanislaus County Public Health Officer. Good evening to the board. I am here to introduce the proclamation from the board regarding the 7th Bi-National Health Week, which is October 13th to 21st. And I'd like to begin by thanking the board for recognizing this important event for the Latino community of our county. Bi-National Health Week has grown tremendously over the past 6 years. Starting in 2001 in 7 California counties and expanding by 2006 to 31 U.S. states, the District of Columbia, and 3 Canadian provinces. And I'd like to take just a quick minute to share with you my experience of last year's celebration. I was at the a bi-national health conference, a meeting of the California health officers and the Mexican health ministry in San Diego and Tijuana. And on the second day, there was an announcement of the participating counties, and there we were, Stanislaus. And so I commend El Concilio that organized our first bi-national health week last year. And I will add to that Health Net this year that has been instrumental in taking it to another level. In closing, I'd like to share that this year's celebration is really a collaboration of many agencies. Included in that is Health Services Agency, the Area Agency on Aging, and I especially thank Margie Palomino, the Community Services Agency, the Children and Families Commission, as well as many other community agencies. And so at this time, I'd like to call Sally Perez of HealthNet and Laura Sanchez from El Concilio to come and receive this proclamation.
I hear, have here tonight a resolution. Let's try this again. Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors does hereby call all the people of Stanislaus County to join all Californians of Latin American origin in observing October 13th through 21st, 2007, as Bi-National Health Week in Stanislaus County. And I have this proclamation to give to you, a resolution. And would you like to say anything?
Thank you. Chairman O'Brien and members of the board, on behalf of the Bi-National Health Week Committee, I would like to thank you for your support of Bi-National Health Week. Currently, we have 12 events that are occurring throughout Stanislaus County, and we know that many families will benefit from these services, and so we do thank you.
And what we'd like to do also at this time is to present to you the official 2007 Bi-National Health Week mural, the poster off of the mural. There's one specific one done every year, and this is the one for 2007. And thank you very much. Look forward to next year.
Thank you. Next is the public comment period. This is a time on the agenda when anybody can address this board on any item that is not on tonight's agenda. I have no specific request to speak under public comment from the period. I do have some specific requests for an agenda item later on tonight. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to address this board on any issue that's not on tonight's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move to consent calendar. Is there any item to pull from consent calendar? Is there a motion to approve?
Also moved.
I have a motion.
Second.
Second by Supervisor DeMartini. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 4-0. Item B8, approval to accept the Advisory Board on Substance Abuse Programs Annual Report, Behavioral Health and Recovery Services.
Good evening. I'm Denise Hunt, Behavioral Health Director for the county, and it's my distinct pleasure this evening to introduce Jeff McCardia, who's chairman of the Advisory Board on Substance Abuse Programs for our county. Jeff represents, in his capacity as chair, members of the community that your board has appointed to take a look at how we deliver alcohol and drug services, substance abuse services here in Stanislaus County. And he works with a board of some of the most dedicated volunteer board members that I know. So this is Jeff McCardia to give you the report of the board tonight.
Thank you, Denise, and good evening, board members. At this time, did you guys receive a copy of this report? Okay, I'm just going to briefly walk you through it. On page 6 is a list of board members, and some of them are present tonight. I would like to introduce Lynn Goldstein, if you stand up, and Donna Seesoff-Miller. Thank you, Donna. And also with us tonight, not board members, but Kim Bull, who is the director of First Step, which is the prenatal treatment program at SRC, and then Nicole Bowman, who is the clinical supervisor there at First Step as well, and we're going to be hearing from her just a little bit later. I'm going to try and keep this down to about 4 minutes, and we're going to give her about 4 minutes as well. This is kind of scary for me. Let's see, we're going to go back over to page 3. And I'm just going to briefly tell you a little bit about what we do here. Some of our goals are to educate the public to understand the nature of alcohol and drug problems by encouraging collaboration of community groups. We encourage with support from the county to develop and implement effective alcohol and drug abuse programs. We review alcohol and drug program needs of the community. And then into some of our priorities, we oversee public awareness through alcohol and drug programs. We identify problems with access and barriers to successful treatment. That's just a little bit about what we do, and you guys probably know some of that already. Let's just go over to page 4. And some of our subcommittees that we currently do, I'm just going to read this. ABSAP members meet monthly in a public setting to bring attention to issues regarding alcohol and other drug services, and members of the board participate in committee meetings. We're all pretty dedicated, and we attend other subcommittee meetings besides just the monthly ABSAP meeting. Those committees consist of the Executive Education Prevention Committee, Stanislaus Recovery Center Committee, Board of Supervisors Presentation Committee, and the Contract Provider Cultural Competence Committee. The Executive Committee meets regularly with the Director of Behavioral Health and Recovery Services and other staff members to set goals and the future direction for ABSAP. ABSAP also meets regularly with the Mental Health Board to address issues around co-occurring disorders, which we'll talk a little bit about that here in a minute as well. We're going to go ahead and go over to page 7 of the report, and I'm just going to briefly run you through some of the programs that we have here in Stanislaus County, starting with Stanislaus Recovery Center, which from here on out I'll just refer to as SRC. It's broken up into 5 subcategories here. starting with adult residential treatment, which is 30-day inpatient treatment program, then dropping down to the dual disorder programming where we're actually treating mental disorders and substance abuse in the same location at the same time during their inpatient stay. And I'll get into that a little bit more here in the next couple of minutes. Then we have the prenatal treatment program, which is first step, which Nicole will be talking about here in a minute. We have the drop-in center there at SRC, as well as aftercare services. Then we have here in Stanislaus County the Genesis Narcotic Replacement Treatment Program, Behavioral Health Promotion and Prevention Services, Alcohol and Other Drug Outpatient Services. We're all familiar with Prop 36. Stan works Behavioral Health Services, Families in Partnership. We have Adult Drug Court, Juvenile Justice, Juvenile Hall, a Teen Recovery Center, and then a new one is the State Incentive Grant, which is a 3-year federal grant focusing on developing community-wide prevention strategies to reduce, it says being, but it's actually binge, there's a typo there, binge drinking and associated problems with youth. Over to page 10, we're actually going to get into our annual report here. And what am I, at about 2 or 3 minutes? I'll wrap this up in about 1 minute. I'm going to start with paragraph 3, and some of the rest of this report is going to be referring back to this paragraph. But what it says is of grave concern to the advisory board are reports from Stanislaus County Office of Education, the Stanislaus County Sheriff's Office, the Modesto Police Department, and the California Highway Patrol report that heroin use is on an increase among teens. These are pretty substantial places, not just little public places, but these are substantial offices reporting this. Going into the assessment of county alcohol and other drug programs, in the advisory board's judgment, Stanislaus Recovery Center, once again SRC, provides excellent short-term treatment. We're talking 30, I think the average stay is 35 days inpatient for men and women. These people are very dedicated. They go out of their way, and I mean so far out of their way that they're literally paying for paper clips, paper, pens, and pencils out of their own pockets. Next is first step, which is longer-term treatment, 6 to 12 months, for women with children under 5 years of age. They actually have their children inpatient with them there. Once again, they're having excellent outcomes. Very dedicated group of people. One thing we want to touch on here briefly, and I'm going to go back to this once or twice more, is that there is no residential treatment services for teens in Stanislaus County at this time. And we believe this to be a great treatment deficit in need of serious consideration. The next thing I want to touch on here at SRC is the Mental Health Services Funding Act, and it has enabled successful treatment of individuals with co-occurring mental health and substance abuse disorders by SRC. Stanislaus County is a leader in providing this cutting-edge treatment. We're like one of 3 counties that modeled this, and I believe that we will be, or like this is cutting-edge stuff here, and I believe that we're going to be modeled by many other counties to come. The success rates are absolutely phenomenal, and like I said, we're one of 3 counties that started doing this. And then Stanislaus Recovery Center continues to increase on program effectiveness with the ongoing help of the advisory board's Stanislaus Recovery Center Committee, formed last year to provide community input and advice to the recovery center. This committee meets monthly and has played a key role in implementing parenting classes, furthering 12-step involvement, and recommending ways to decrease unsuccessful discharge rates. And I'd just like to give you one quick example of that. Somebody thought about taking a look at the reason people are discharged, and one of the reasons people were discharged was for smoking in inappropriate times and places. And it was actually about a 6% discharge rate for that reason. And so we took a look at adding two extra 10-minute cigarette breaks, and we cut that 6% down to zero over a six-month period, which is actually right around the neighborhood of 3 to 4 people a month that completed the program because of two extra cigarette breaks. We're looking at stuff as simple as that. Once again, the advisory board recommends additional long-term alcohol and other drug treatment services for teens and men. Assessment of access to county alcohol and other drug programs. Larger communities receive adequate information on county alcohol and drug treatment program availability. In an effort to outreach outlying communities, the county advisory board members plan to present informational presentations to local city councils on issues regarding other drug and alcohol education. In short, Modesto, Turlock, some of the larger communities are receiving lots of information, and some of the smaller ones like Waterford aren't getting the services that the larger communities are. A recap on the assessment is services for men. It is listing a negative here. I'd like to throw a positive in with it. Excellent outcomes for men in the 30-day programs. However, the county continues to lack long-term and other drug treatment options for men. Services for women, there is also excellent outcomes for women in short-term inpatient treatment. However, there's excellent outcomes for women with children under 5 years of age, but we don't have long-term services for women who don't have children under 5 years of age. And once again, the services for teens, there currently is none. Family focus, what all this stuff means is that men currently lack long-term services. Teens are being overlooked completely. This creates a conflict in overall family recovery. In an effort to foster family recovery, a long-term treatment program for men and residential treatment program for teens is greatly needed. The county does an excellent job at meeting cultural competency. Very effective in Modesto and some of the larger communities, not very effective in some of the smaller communities, and we intend to address that. And I'd just like to close with some of our achievements for the year. The focus on the advisory board on substance abuse programs remains the education of its members and the community regarding drug abuse and alcoholism. The advisory board partnered with the Red Ribbon Committee to expand its week-long celebration to adults and the business community. And you'll be seeing us back here in about 2 or 3 weeks, I think, doing presentations for the Red Ribbon Awards. Joint meetings with the Mental Health Board are semi-annually, and it's recommended that this activity continue. Social host ordinances in Modesto and Waterford were supported by us and both passed. A telephone number that consumers can call to report complaints or treatment access issues for Stanislaus County residents is currently in place, and I'm pleased to inform you that we've had no complaints as of today. In June, the Prevention Summit culminated numerous planning meetings supported by the advisory board. Board members played several key roles in the Stanislaus County Center's 5th-year anniversary celebration. Members presented behavioral health and recovery services staff with recognition certificates, which was met with an overwhelming response of gratitude. And lastly, the Advisory Board on Substance Abuse Programs currently has several vacancies. However, the members currently serving on the board are dedicated. And just some statistics on the last page. You guys can look these over in your leisure. The one I would like to point out, though, is about 5 paragraphs down. It's a little short paragraph, and it says these measurements are reported by Cal OMS, and they're actually measuring Stanislaus County against other counties in the state. And according to the data reported, to the state by the organization, arrests went down by 55% and jail days went down by 41% in the population provided treatment in Stanislaus County. All that equals dollars saved. With that, I would like to introduce Nicole Bowman. Hope I didn't go too much over. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, good evening.
First of all, I just want to say thank you for having me. Thanks, Jeff, for asking me to come speak. He asked me to come tell you a little bit about my story. My name is Nicole Bowen. I am a recovering alcoholic and an addict. And my story started, I started using and drinking when I was approximately 14 years old. By the time I was 15, I was full-blown in my addiction and pregnant. I continued to live my life in a dangerous and unhealthy manner, which landed me in jail at age 18. Incarceration became a part of my life along with drugs and alcohol, including prison, for the next 12 years. I became pregnant with my second child, still actively using, drinking, and doing time. My grandparents ended up caring for my children due to my addiction and my incarceration. In 2000, I ended up getting myself in a situation which could have landed me in prison for 7 to 10 years while pregnant with my third child. That was a real eye-opener for me, and I knew that I had hit my bottom. I did 2 programs in jail, and after completion, I ended up getting a year sentence and was told about programs that could help me while I was in jail. I did 2 programs in jail, and after completion of the second one, I was released to Laura's House, which is a clean and sober house for women and children. I delivered my baby on July 1st of 2000 and was directed to start First Step Perinatal Program for Women and Children, which is a collaboration between the Center for Human Services and Sierra Vista that contracts with Behavioral Health Recovery Services and Community Services Agency. I completed both programs within 7 months. First Step gave me the tools, the knowledge, and the support on my addiction, how to live life, and how to be a mother to my 3 children. Since completion of all programs, I have worked my way to becoming a productive member of society. I went to school and received a certification in drugs and alcohol addiction through the state and was offered a job at a clean and sober house at which I worked for 4 years. An opportunity came along for me to apply at First Step as a counselor, which I did, and I was hired. I have been employed with First Step since August 21st of 2006 and was recently promoted to clinical supervisor and part of the management team of the program that gave me my life back. Without that program, I can honestly say that I wouldn't be standing here in front of all of you telling you my miracle story. My clean date is March 9th of 2000. As an added note, I wanted to throw in there, 5 of our current counselors that are working at First Step are all graduates of First Step. And also, I want to strongly emphasize that people can and do recover with treatment, and that treatment works. Thank you.
Jeff, I want to thank you for a thorough report. Any questions or a motion to adopt?
I'd just like to make a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir, Supervisor.
That lady was just here, and I'm sorry I didn't write down your name as you were speaking. You talked about the treatment program giving you your life back. And I think it's important to note that, you know, in spite of the cost of the drug treatment programs, that we calculate that of every dollar spent, there are $7 saved in other ways. And I really can't emphasize that enough. There's, you know, dollars that are saved because of effective drug treatment programs and health care and law enforcement costs, decreased visits to emergency rooms and hospital stays, as well as arrests and incarcerations that don't happen anymore. Plus, days off of work because of drug and alcohol problems. So this is an important service that the county does to the community. We have an interest in helping these people get their lives back, get back on track,
and become a productive member of society. That's all the comment I'd like to make.
Thank you, Supervisor. Is that a motion to approve this report?
Yes, it is, sir.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 4-0. Thank you for the report. It is past the time of 6:40. We'll move to a scheduled hearing. Public hearing to consider the reduction in urgent care service capacity, elimination of clinical laboratory services, reduction in the radiology services, and reduction of the maximum income level for eligibility to the medically indigent adult program, and approval to conduct a reduction of force with the Health Services Agency.
Good evening, Chairman O'Brien, Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, and Mr. Doering. My name is Mary Ann Lee, and I'm the Managing Director of the Health Services Agency. With me here at the table is Steve Russo, a principal of HFS Consulting, and Carol Dunbar, the agency's Chief Financial Officer. We're here this evening really to continue the report that we gave on September 11th to you with regard to our financial situation and initiatives that and recommendations to solve the financial situation that we're in. Some of those recommendations that we prepared on the evening or on the board meeting of the 11th required a public hearing, and on that date you set the hearing, and that's why we're here this evening. I wanted to point out that the requirement of this public hearing is found in Health and Safety Code, and we've done the required notices according to that code. We have also gone beyond what is required, and we've published a notice about this hearing in both the both English and Spanish newspapers twice prior to this date. Particularly due to the tough issues that we're facing, I think it's important to give some context. And in terms of the Health Services Agency, there are really three main components. The Public Health Division, which is essentially mandated and grant-funded programs, and then the Medically Indigent Adult Program and our Clinic and Ancillary Division. The Medically Indigent Adult Program is a mandate upon the county. The Clinic and Ancillary Division is not mandated. About 10% of the visits that are provided through the Clinic and Ancillary Division are to those MIA patients, which is part of the mandate. The focus of the report on the 11th and the recommendations tonight are on the Medically Indigent Adult Program and the Clinic and Ancillary Division, but not really having to do with the Public Health Division. We're here because the financial picture of the agency is not good. Unfortunately, we're looking at, when we were putting together the 07-08 budget, it appeared that we were heading for a $17 million shortfall. Your board in the 05 strategic plan had planned for a general fund contribution, and for this third year, the 07-08 is the third year of that strategic plan, that was allocated at $4.4 million. So the shortfall after the general fund contribution was at a level of over $12 million. As you know, we had applied for and were anxiously awaiting the decision about our FQHC look-alike application, and we had estimated that the revenue, the net impact of that designation would be worth $6.4 million, which means that's great, but which means that we still had a problem. We still were facing a shortfall of over $6 million. And we put an awful lot of emphasis on the FQHC, and it is cause for celebration. And one may wonder why, you know, why we are here proposing service reductions. But the FQHC only goes so far. We did get the award. You know that in September we were notified that we were awarded, and it was effective September 20th. Again, the net impact that we're estimating is $6.4 million on an annual basis. But the FQ reimbursement only applies to primary care services, and only for Medi-Cal and Medicare. So it doesn't offer any additional reimbursement to help solve our financial problems with regard to the non-primary care services. two things happened in the spring that led to the a summer of strategic planning. The first was that, unfortunately, we realized that we were doing worse than we thought we had been doing, and we've come before you already detailing some of those financial problems and what we needed in order to really satisfy the operating shortfall in previous fiscal years. The second is that we still hadn't heard on that FQ application at the time, and so we were really at a point that we had to start doing some planning. So we set some objectives. The first one was to conduct a financial assessment and recovery, and then to model the clinic system without the FQ as a baseline, to model the clinic system with FQ because at the time we were still hopeful, and then finally we began to model the clinic system, really dismantling the clinic system and only serving that small MIA population. Fortunately, we did learn that we had received the designation, so the emphasis on planning went to the FQ, the model with the FQ. Given the situation that we were in, there were three teams that began working concurrently. The first was an internal auditor team that came in and did a focused audit to identify weaknesses within the clinic system. The second is an IT team that's addressing the challenges that we have with two accounting systems. And then the third, and much of the focus of this presentation, is an initiatives team, and it's made up of HFS consultants, members from the CEO office, and HSA. We came to you and said that we have such a challenge that we really could use outside help, both for their expertise and help in moving as quickly as we could, given that we were losing $1 million a month. And so that initiatives team began working with HFS consultants. Since that time, we've held regular briefings with the Health Executive Committee. There's been a lot of work done. We've been meeting about every 2 to 3 weeks with the Health Executive Committee, going through our ideas and initiatives, and all the initiatives that have been presented either before or tonight we have gone through with the Health Executive Committee. At this point, I want to turn the presentation over to Steve Russo. And he's going to share his perspective on the market and the county's role, and then go into the detail of the initiatives.
Thank you, Marianne. Good evening, Board of Supervisors. The first slide is really an overview of Stanislaus County. You have several providers in the county, including the county clinic system. You have a FQHC provider in the county with about 8 clinics. You have a healthcare district who has a rural health clinic in Patterson. You have a district hospital up in Oakdale that runs 2 clinics in Oakdale and Riverbank. So you have about 18 clinics throughout the county providing services, and I would call them safety net providers. We also have 4 or 5 hospitals in the county providing services, including a soon-to-be-open Kaiser Hospital. During the past dozen years, you've had about 3 to 4, even up to 5 hospitals that have closed in Stanislaus County for various reasons. 2 healthcare districts have closed, 2 hospitals in Modesto have closed, and 1 in Ceres. I think we could talk about why they closed, but obviously this is a national problem. We have inadequate federal and state reimbursement. Healthcare is a tough business. You've been providing a level of care that goes way beyond what other counties provide, and I think it's gotten to a point where you're experiencing these deficits like other counties have done. The trend has been for many counties to get out of the business. You look to the south of you, and you have Merced County, who basically got out of the business of running a county hospital by giving it to Sutter Health, who now CHW runs. You have other counties who basically closed the hospital's doors and were subcontracted to another provider. So the trend has been really to get out of the business only because from a revenue expense standpoint, dollars don't make sense to sustain a level of effort. So I wanted to start with giving a broad perspective on what's happening in the marketplace. We came up with an initiatives team, basically, with members of the CEO's office and HSA staff and myself, another consultant. And we were really geared on trying to solve this deficit that we were faced with. And the first round was really looking at 20 initiatives that would yield some savings that would basically get you out of that deficit that Marianne just alluded to. I think what really guided us in this whole thing was really to look at, does it affect your MIA population? Did it affect the residency program? Are these services available in the marketplace? and are they FQHC mandated services under this FQHC model? It wasn't just an expense reduction, because if that was the case, we just could have closed clinics and done with it. So we tried to do this a rational process and looked at, like I said, 51 initiatives. We couldn't attack all of them, but we will be looking at the other 30. And some of the ones we're going to be bringing forward to you going forward is going to be including some management reorganization and some staffing ratios that will be brought up to you. So as you see, there's this show is worth about $6.2 million, which we'll be going over today in more detail. As you see before you, Marianne alluded to that you are facing a pretty significant shortfall. And the two columns are really just basically very similar, but because you're already in a fiscal year, you won't yield the benefits and the reductions and the additional revenue from the FQHC, because basically you're already in the fiscal year. So if you look at the annualized estimates, it really gets you out of that deficit reduction, not counting the $4.4 million that you're already putting in. But that's on an annualized basis. But because, again, you're starting during the fiscal year, you won't basically yield those savings. And right now you're looking at about another $4.1 million contribution besides the $4.4 million that you will have to put in to sustain the current healthcare system. Some of the initiatives before you, you already approved in a prior meeting, and some of these are still pending for today's meeting, but just to go over some of the summary of them, we basically are talking about implementing an MIA formulary, which basically is a standardized drug regimen program for the patients, using 340B pricing discounts, which enables you to buy pharmaceuticals at a reduced price versus what you're paying now due to your FQHC designation. Looking at some workflow redesign in the pharmacy. Because of your FQHC designation, you've implemented sliding fee scales throughout the clinics, and we're basically, as a result, you're adjusting the personal pay pricing methodology. We're also moving to get patients quicker to Medi-Cal from the MIAs, because as we get to the quicker, we could basically bill those patients via the FQHC. We also came up with adding a copay model to the MIA program in addition to the current share of cost. And we're in the process of renegotiating or terminating commercial contracts that really that pay you about a third of the cost of the care that costs you to deliver these services at your clinics. Just continuing, at the same time, the HSA is implementing what's called same-day scheduling, which enables patients to get into your clinics at a much faster pace than prior. We're going to designate one clinic to serve all your MIA patients throughout the county. We're looking at staffing efficiency throughout the 7 clinics that you're currently running. And one of the pending board considerations today before you is the service reduction in the urgent care and lowering the lower of the income limit for the MIA eligibility. Timeframes. Basically, we started having these meetings, at many meetings with the HSA teams. And we met with the Community Health Center Board many times, where there were separate initiatives approved at that level. We came before you on September 11th to go over some of these same initiatives, and these were approved. And we met with members of the Healthcare Executive Committee as well and briefed them. HSA also met with staff and unions to go over their basically proposals. There was a Community Health Summit last week that I spoke at in the community that was sponsored by the Medical Society here in town. And obviously today is the hearing. And then this fall and going forward in spring, there'll be implementation of many of these concepts. So here it is. Recommendations before you. There's 4 of them. You can see it's about $2 million in expense reduction. At a high level, you see there's a reduction in the urgent care capacity. It's the elimination of the clinical laboratory. It's the reduction of the radiology services. And it's the reducing the MIA maximum income limit, which we'll go over each in detail going forward here. Urgent care. Basically, you've been running an urgent care clinic 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. In my opinion, it's not an urgent care clinic. It's basically a primary care clinic open 12 hours a day. The acuity of the patients is not at the urgent care level, it's the primary care level. Basically, you're operating at 50% capacity. And what I mean that is you're seeing about 15,000 patients a year. If you basically divide that by the number of hours in a year that you're basically running the clinic, you're seeing about 3.5 patients per hour, for 2 full-time providers, hence about 50% capacity. We're proposing that basically the urgent care clinic be continued, but a reduction in hours. It would be open 5 to 9 when your other clinics are not open, and it would be open 8 hours a week, 8 hours a day on the weekends. This is what urgent care clinics do. They're opened up when other primary care clinics are not open. You're running 6 other clinics, and basically you're expanding the hours of an urgent care concept for people that can get in during those hours. The operating loss right now is $1.3 million by running this clinic. The reduction would be 5 full-time FTE positions. The estimated savings from this would be about $850,000. The patients impacted would be anywhere from 0 to 50%. And what I mean by that is, because you have 36 hours of operating hours, a lot of these patients would be scheduled during those hours. They would also be scheduled to the other clinics that you currently run because of your same-day scheduling. So we believe that the impact is minimum because of the current capacity at your clinics now, the ability to schedule these clinics at your 6 other clinics, and a same-day scheduling. Clinical laboratory. Right now you're running a clinical laboratory. Basically, FQHCs throughout the nation do not run clinical laboratories. They contract out to external lab vendors. In this community alone, I've counted at least a dozen vendors that basically would be an avenue for patients to go get the lab tests, whether it's LabCorp, whether it's Quest, whether it's other providers. Some of these tests are performed currently by lab vendors. Right now, you're losing about $872,000 on this, and the services are available in the market. I say that because as we went through this process, it was very important that we wanted very little disruption to patient care, and we looked at, are these services available in the market? And laboratory is a prime example. You have lots of laboratory vendors in this community to take over these patients. The county is really only responsible for the MIA patients, which the county will buy from these same vendors. So we see no interruption in services from going to this. You can't really compete with these prior vendors running a county clinical laboratory. The impacts. This is basically, there would be 10 full-time positions that would be reduced. One position would be basically transferred to the public health laboratory, which you currently run. There is no reduction in service there. HSA would purchase laboratory services for MIA only. The estimated savings would be anywhere from $200,000 to $718,000. And there's basically an $86,000 one-time expense because of a buyout of some reagents, I believe. And also, because you run a clinical laboratory, you're going to have to basically upgrade some equipment, and so there's a cost avoidance of about $100,000 in facility upgrades that you have to make if you continue to run the clinical lab. This just gives you a snapshot of the clinical laboratory. Basically, I'm not going to go over every single number, but the important numbers is that you're going to have to buy laboratory for the MIAs, and we estimate that to be about $50,000. You have some lease buyouts. You can see the projected savings from a low of 203 to a high of 718, and depending on how we calculate the indirect costs of those numbers. So you can see basically we try to put together a pro forma that kind of shows you the revenue and expense for the laboratory and the current loss you're sustaining as of today. Radiology. Radiology is very similar to laboratory. You have several vendors in the community providing services right now. You have the capacity in the community to basically provide radiology services to your patients. The current loss is about $663,000 right now. Again, the services are available in the marketplace, which basically met our criteria for looking at services that would have very little disruption to patient care throughout the county. And again, the county is really only responsible for the MIA patients, and these services are readily available in the marketplace. The impact to radiology would be about 4 full-time positions. HSA would purchase services for the MIA only. The avoid expense of digitizing tests of imaging interpretation transmission. Right now you have digitizing tests for imaging for basically CT, ultrasound. If you continue, you're going to have to spend over $200,000 to digitize all your plain film because that's where the technology is going, and people reading this test are not going to read the film as you currently, as they're currently being read today. So again, there's another cost avoidance of about $200,000 if you continue in this business. There's also a potential for revenue from ortho reads because you're going to be basically providing radiology services for orthopedics. And again, the estimated savings is anywhere between $347,000 to $528,000 for radiology services. And just to put a little financial spreadsheet in front of you, you can see the current revenue, you can see the current expenses, you can see the high and low of the expense savings, again, depending on the savings attributed to the indirects. So it's anywhere from $347,000 to $528,000. And you are going to have an expense to buy the services for the MIAs. This last one basically is the recommendation to reduce the maximum income limit of the federal poverty level from 250% to 200%. The current limit you're currently providing is higher than in most counties. 72% of the counties in California set the limit at 200%. 86% set it at or below that level. There are currently 175 individuals that will fall between the 200 and 250%. What's important here is you're not going from all to nothing. These same patients, because they're in that 200-250%, they would have a current share of cost of anywhere from $597 to $1,000 a month before the county would kick in expenses to cover their health care. Just show you a sample of counties that surround Stanislaus. You basically have Merced, Madera, and Sacramento at the 200% of the federal poverty level, and you have San Joaquin at the 300%. So the proposal before you is really to get in line with most of the counties and provide the MIA level at the 200% of the poverty level. Impacts. There's no staffing impacts by this recommendation. There's about 175 individuals that become uninsured. The savings is about $250,000. This is based on last year's utilization. It could vary going forward. And again, it's consistent with the majority of counties in California. At this point, I'd like to turn back to Mary Ann to talk about the reductions in force and other staffing considerations. Thank you.
Based on the recommendations for your consideration this evening and the other initiatives that we've already brought before you, we would be recommending a reduction in force that impacts 37 full-time positions. 19 of those are filled, and with an awful lot of work that's gone on looking at our current vacancies, it looks like 9 of those 19 would transfer to existing vacancies within the agency, while 10 of the 19 would be subject to the reduction in force. We're also recommending that two full-time positions be transferred from one budget unit to another, and the downward reclassification of 5 full-time positions. And with that, the recommendations this evening are for you to conduct a public hearing and approve the recommendations to reduce the urgent care capacity, to eliminate the clinical laboratory, to reduce the radiology services, and reduce the MIA maximum income limit, to approve the reduction in force, and the reclassification and transfer of positions, to amend the salary and position allocation resolution, and then to authorize staff to fulfill the activities to implement these changes. That closes our presentation, and now will be time to open the public hearing.
Before we open the public hearing, are there any questions of staff? At this point, we'll open the public hearing, and we'll start with some specific requests to speak. We'll start with Bob Hagopian.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bob Hagopian, longtime resident of Stanislaus County. Actually, I was born in Modesto. I'm speaking against the closure of the laboratory and reduction of services of the Stanislaus Health Services Agency. I'm cancer patient, colon cancer, stage 4. I've been treated at the services for the last few years. My blood work has all been done at that laboratory. It's been timely transmitted to the oncology department. It's critical that this is done. It has to be done the day before you take chemo, or without the services done on site, I think it would be a disservice to the cancer patients there. I also think that this is one of the few clinics available to the citizens in Stanislaus County. You close it or you defuse it, you reduce the health care in this county. I also believe that making any critical decision at this time is not a smart move by the members of this board. With the federal government coming up the next 2 years, we're going to do some major changes in the health care system. I believe that you make any premature decisions, it'll be wrong. You have to see what the federal government plays out at this time. Then you can make your decisions to close or augment or streamline the services of this county. But I believe doing any major changes now is incorrect and not responsible to the citizens of this county. Thank you.
Thank you. Jenna Lee.
This is my mother, Gina Lee, and I'm Elaine Nahara. I'm a college student at Sam State, and my mother is a patient with the county. We're definitely against the closure or any kind of augmentation or anything of these labs. We feel that because these labs are there, they're easily accessible, and like the gentleman was talking about with the cancer patients, we have family members who they go there and they get that blood work done, and the next day they get their chemotherapy and such, and
or not. It depends upon the blood work.
Right.
And it's timely, and it's otherwise, as you said, where will they go? Because I don't think contracting out to a private lab, they would be able to get the results back, because there it's all in-house, so they have them. And that would result in no chemo, or not as good of health care, because the doctors won't have access to it. And also for the patients that are really ill, it's one stop. You know, you can go to the doctor. Well, we used to, could, now they've moved the other clinic to Paradise, but still you can go get blood work done, radiology, and it's all right there. A lot of people have public transit. A lot of them aren't here because they could have got here on public transit, but they couldn't have gotten home again because the buses don't run that late. And I know people say, well, who cares? But you have to care. You know, people, I have Medicare and Medi-Cal, I'm disabled, but I don't know the private doctor I can go to. I see Dr. Forno she's at the Paradise Clinic. I saw Dan Cox, the physician's assistant, and he left and moved because of all the what are we going to do, you know, and he just got a better offer for his family and left. And I like, my current doctor is great. But it's like, where else do you go? There's no, even if you have Medicare, most private doctors won't take you. And it's, you know, and I know they're saying, well, that's not about the lab, but I don't, all the labs that I know, I don't know of one that is close and convenient for other people. And you say, oh, well, convenient. Well, when you have to ride buses, I don't have to anymore. But when you do, it's really, I had to for years, and it's really an issue. I couldn't schedule some clinic appointments because it was too late in the day. And they do a really great job there. I know they're busy. I would have been a little more understanding if I would have known that they were that they had lost some people, had resigned, as I read today in the paper. Because I noticed they were really busy, and I thought, what's this? Well, I didn't know they had lost staff members. But it's just, I don't understand where people are going to go. I mean, you know, what do you do? To me, it's less than it used to be. They've reduced things a lot now anyway. And the urgent care is Have you ever tried to get a same-day appointment? It's really hard to call in and get one. It's just almost impossible. And they try. It's just you call, just whoever gets on the phone first gets one. And the urgent care, it needs to be there. It's not just a same-day appointment. If they opened up, trust me, it's easier now to get an appointment, but it's still really impossible to call in and get an appointment. And where do you go? You can't. They're just going to clog up the emergency room then. And I'm sure the emergency rooms are, are not going to love that very much, But I'll let my daughter speak.
Also, I know with the F, that I forgot how to what it was, the FQ, that they're pointing out that they're only responsible for MIA patients. But these Medi-Cal and Medicare patients, they wouldn't be able to afford a private, even though they have this Medi-Cal, there's many private doctors who won't take them. And I know personally, my work didn't provide insurance for part-time employees, private insurance that I purchased, I would be a medically indigent adult. And I would have to go to the county during the summertime when I wasn't at school. And I really think that you can't, in this whole number crunching, you can't forget about the Medicare and Medi-Cal patients. And we say, it's a money issue, but it's also a matter of they're human beings. They need these rights. They need abilities. And the clinic over there has always provided what has been needed. And if there is a closure or reduction of the labs and radiology and the specialty clinics there, it's going to affect people. People will not be seen and possibly, and eventually end up, they won't have any kind of care because of that.
To me, that's a public safety issue, too, because you want people to get care because then they're sicker, they end up in the, hospital emergency rooms, or it is a public health issue. And it is a compassionate care issue also because people don't realize how many cancer patients and stuff do get. I didn't realize it myself either until the last year how many patients get care at Phoenix. I would call it Phoenix Hospital, but they're at the clinics and the oncology clinics and do the blood work there. I never realized it until the last year until we had family that was there. And they do provide a lot of care for not just Medi-Cal people. You know what I mean? For people on Medicare, lots of other things. So, it's not just, they're just, I know people have an attitude, even though people are getting better with it, that, they'll find somewhere to go, or, when they get a hangnail, they just can't go to the doctor. But, it is a vital service.
Lastly, we just ask you to please do not push these initiatives through. There will be so many people who are affected, and sometimes people don't consider those of low socioeconomic status, low income, to be important and worth consideration, and they truly are. So please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Elena Nahara? Oh, okay. I'm sorry, Elena. Joyce Balch? Balch? Excuse me. This will be Joyce and Cookie, correct?
And Cookie.
All right.
Correct. CEO Robinson, Chairman O'Brien, Supervisors DeMartini, Montes, and Mayfield. My name is Joyce Balch, and I'm a lab assistant at the Health Services Agency. And I started there when I was 17. I've been there for 34 and a half years, and 24 and a half of those years have been county. And I've seen many changes over the years. And when the hospital closed in 1997, no changes were made to our lab and our lab services. We remained a hospital lab. We ran 7 days a week. When every other department was closed for holidays, even urgent care on the major holidays, we were open for SBHC blood draws and testing at the Behavioral Health Center. We have a dedicated team of lab professionals to help the doctors diagnose, treat, and monitor the patients. We are committed to provide the fastest turnaround times possible, and we're available to explain the results or consult with the healthcare providers. The lab not only serves the MIA, Medicare, and Medi-Cal patients, we also provide services to patients from the Veterans Administration, the County Jail, the Oncology Clinic, UCSF, St. Luke's, Stem Cell Surgery Center, and we also collect specimens for DNA diagnostics as well as we did SBHC, the Behavioral Health Center, also doing their blood draws for them and their testing. On August 1st, the lab stopped doing the blood drawing and testing to the Behavioral Health Center, and a temporary lab from Walnut Creek was brought in to do those lab draws until DMC's lab could prepare to take it over. We were told that DMC had expressed concern that they could not provide stat services to the Behavioral Health Center, that they were looking at outside labs to come in for those stat services. Quest already had stated that they couldn't provide those stat services. LabCorp, which is another lab locally, has also contacted our lab about HSA lab providing stat services for LabCorp. And I think by designing the workflow, I think the clinical lab can be profitable. I can and generate revenue if it's well managed. I think we can retain a scaled down stat lab for MIA oncology, the jail patients, and still be available for outside providers such as St. Luke's, UCSF, LabCorp, and possibly partnerships with LabCorp and doctors to get those draws for SBHC. I think that's more revenue for us that we could bring in. The lab staff has already been reduced from 21 filled positions down to 10 positions. And I believe if they reduce the hours of support from two shifts to one shift and run us like a reference lab where most of the tests are batched, we can save on reagents. I think if there's a creation for clinical pathways, much like a formulary where the doctors are limited to ordering tests only considered medically necessary and cost effective. Each clinic in the community, the Paradise, Houston, the lab has trained a lot of the medical assistants in those clinics to draw blood. Each clinic has their own lab area. PMO just opened a second lab area where they do draw blood and they do wave testing. What site could be more accessible than where the patients are being seen for appointments now? I think we can still be there to support our public health lab for bioterrorism or disaster emergencies. And I think clearly there's a need in the community for this. We can provide those services. I would request that the board ask management to reconsider and give the lab at least until the end of the fiscal year to allow for the ongoing changes that were implemented in April and to explore different avenues. Once the lab is closed, it'll be difficult to reopen the lab. And there's also a personal and a human side to this. If our patients, you know, they don't have anywhere to go. There is Quest Diagnostics. They do have lab stations everywhere. They're just around the corner from a lot of our clinics. But having the blood drawn right there in the clinics where the patients are seen by the doctor is more accessible. So I'm finished. Thank you. Vicki, did you want
to? I would actually like to share what Mr. Hagopian tried to share with you. The test that the oncologist orders for the oncology patients are performed in our laboratory. Once they're on the analyzer, they go straight to the computer, and then they are at the doctor's fingertips for results. And therefore, it's a quick turnaround time, and it's a better service for our patients. Whereas, if we're going to send our patients to other outside providers, not only are they not going to have that service, but they're going to pay 3 to 4 times more if they're personal pay patients and have to pay out of pocket for lab services. And therefore, I find that the patients will not be going for lab tests, which will affect their health. That's all I have to say.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Those are all the specific requests I have in this agenda item. Is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to speak? Sir? And I will have you state your name for the record.
My name's Frank Johnson, and I'm a longtime resident of Modesto. Good evening, Chairman O'Brien and Board Supervisors. I want to commend your PowerPoint presentation. I thought it was a timely project. But I, as a patient of the clinic, I find the PowerPoint presentation pretty much one-sided. Unlike most, I have a pretty good insurance and I'm able to pay. And I didn't see any source of income that was coming into the clinic as opposed to what was being lost by the clinic. I'm sure that there's many, many patients that have insurance that utilize this clinic as well as I do and pay. And I would love to see the total of income that's being generated by this clinic as opposed to the expenditure of it. Another issue that was brought up was the fact that to reduce the income level of the MIA, which is a responsibility of the county, well, if you do that, wouldn't that create a revenue on the other end? Because if I was in private industry as a laboratory, first thing I would do was raise my rates, knowing that I'm being forced to accept new patients. And if they were to come in as an MIA, my rates would be higher and bill the county at a higher rate as opposed to dealing with it the way it is right now. The other one is, going to another clinic as an MIA, will you get the same respect as you would at this clinic? No, you won't. I've been there and done that. The turnaround time, I got angry at this clinic one time and said, well, I think I'll go visit another one. And I did. Not only did they lose my lab work, it was 3 weeks before I was able to get it and take it to my doctor. Then they wouldn't release it to me. I had to go back to the doctor, get a signature stated from him, to get the lab work from them, and take it back to him. Many, many of these so-called laboratories that are throughout the city will not accept certain insurance companies such as Medi-Cal, Medicaid. Some of them won't even accept Blue Cross. So there is a serious issue by closing this clinic. It will affect a lot of people other than just the MIA or the Medi-Cal. And I'm asking the supervisors to reconsider, ask the administration to come back with a financial income as well as a financial expenditure. Find out what this clinic is making and what is in the future with the government grants that are pending for the new turnaround on this Medi-Cal situation in this country, as opposed to just hearing expenditures. Everyone has expenditures, but what is the total income? Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else wishing to address the board on this issue?
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Corinne Wilson, business agent for AFSCME. On behalf of the members that we represent at AFSCME, I'm just here to ask the board to reconsider the initiatives that have been presented to you today, because we believe that this is a dismantling of a healthcare system that would work for the poor in this community, and it is also has to do with our workers. We have dedicated workers that have worked here for 34 years, 24 years, 23 years, and we have patients who depend on this clinic. And we are asking that the board reconsider the cap charges that were a part of the $768,000, which the cap charges are $500,000 plus. And we ask that you really consider looking at what could be profitable for this community with the lab and the radiology staying open, and look at better ways to cut the cost rather than cutting out the community and cutting out our work.
Very good. Thank you. Is there anybody else wishing to address the board?
Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, Mr. Robinson. My name is Ken Patterson. I'm the director of the Community Services Agency, but since August of 2006, I've served as a member of the Community Health Care Center Board. Community Health Care Center Board was created as a part of the application for the federally qualified health care center status. I rise in support of these recommendations. We have been, as a health care board, a community health care center board, studying these issues, looking at the financials now for more than a year. It's important to note that over 50% of the board members are consumers. They're users of the health services agency clinic system. So while we've been exposed to the possibilities of these changes and we've been looking at them right along as they've been developed, they've not been entirely popular. And I think the other witnesses that you've heard from tonight are certainly commending the service that they receive. For us, though, in supporting these as a Community Health Care Center Board, we feel without these thoughtful reductions that it would potentially imperil the financial viability of the whole clinic system. And for us then, as board members, we think the threat of losing the clinic system would have a much more dreadful impact on our entire community than managing these cuts that have been recommended. So as we've gone through this with Mr. Russo and other staff members of HSA and Ms. Lee, we've come to the conclusion that they are necessary for the long-term viability of the clinic system. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to address the board? At this point, we'll close the public hearing, and I will ask staff if they have any additional comments.
I would like to make a couple of comments based on the presenters this evening. I guess I just wanted to say that we realize this is serious. This is serious, and it does have impacts. And the agency and the county has benefited from some very dedicated employees. And this isn't about the service that the employees have provided. It's about our need to try to reduce or eliminate the losses that we're experiencing. And a fear that if we don't begin to make some changes, the entire clinic system is really at stake, and an awful lot more of personal impacts would be in front of us. In terms of the forecasts that we've made, we've tried to be realistic about what exists today, what can be done. We've incorporated some changes in terms of including some efficiencies that have already occurred. So we've tried to be realistic about forecasting what would be in the coming year, and it still shows a loss. So that's really, in terms of our recommendations, it does incorporate changes, and it does incorporate the revenue. It's not just the expenses. It shows losses considering both the revenue and the expenses to deliver those services. I think I just want to close by saying that we've taken a hard look at an awful lot of initiatives. This isn't just about service reductions that have staffing impacts. As you can see, there are many, many initiatives because we know that one thing can't solve this. It's going to have to take a variety of tough decisions. But the ultimate goal here is to try to preserve the clinic system as best we can.
I'd just like to say that it was great that the county did get the F2SC designation, because without that additional revenue, I think there would have been very drastic cuts going forward. I think it would have meant really dismantling the clinic system, closing it, because there wouldn't have been enough revenue in the system without closing those clinics. That being said, I think you still are facing significant deficits as a county, and those deficits will only get worse going forward because expenses always rise faster than revenue. It's a proven fact. I've worked with many counties throughout California. Again, counties have closed their hospitals, have closed the clinic system. You guys do an awful lot here in the county. We went through a process that I think was very rational. We tried to, again, minimize patient care interruptions. We looked at basically regulations to the FQHC, maintaining the residency program, providing care as mandated to the MIA population, and again, trying to provide services if they could be provided elsewhere in the marketplace. You cannot compete in the private market with some of these services. There are some tough decisions, but we felt these were minimizing patient care issues. And if we can't make these changes, then we're just, again, back to the table on these same deficits. And I think it goes back to will you be able to sustain these deficits and add in additional contributions? That's really what it comes down to. It's really a hard one. So I think the process was very fair among the staff. We had a wide representation of physicians, HSA clinic directors, and we were all in agreement with these recommendations. Thank you very much.
Thank you. CEO Robinson.
Yes, I would like also to clarify what appears to be a possible misconception. In listening to the testimony, there may be a misunderstanding relative to the losses. The Health Services Agency clinic system has been experiencing losses for virtually all of the last 10 years, and to the tune of numbers in excess of $50 million. And those losses have been escalating annually. This is not a new phenomenon. It's not something that's just been occurring in the last 24 or 36 months. This is not an issue that the county has avoided attempting to address. It's an issue that's necessary to take aggressive steps in order to preserve a healthcare system that the Board of Supervisors and administrative staff and our Health Services Agency Managing Director believes is a critical healthcare system to the overall health and well-being of our community. And the steps taken today or recommended today to the Board of Supervisors are intended to help us to preserve that overall system. The projected losses of $16 million in 2007-2008 absent FQHC look-alike funding do, by the way, reflect all sources of revenue. And the $16 million is the net operating losses after factoring revenue from both state and federal payors and from private insurance. So that's a net number, and it does not attempt to avoid or ignore the fact that the county does generate revenue to offset some of the costs. However, the approximately $50 million in overall costs are not covered by the $36 million in revenue.
Board members have comments or questions? Supervisor Monteith.
As I hear numerous of you come forward and talk about the service that Stanislaus County has provided over the years, it appears to me that you feel that the service has been very good. And that's what Stanislaus County has tried to do over the years. As I stated earlier, each year we keep losing money. And as a result, we've tried every possible way to recapture additional money. We keep going in debt more and more each year. It doesn't correct itself. It just gets deeper and deeper. So consequently, we knew that we needed some assistance in making some evaluations, and we asked the consultants to come in. And they took a look at our costs, the services that we've been rendering, and they made some recommendations knowing that we had to do something. Now, many times people can make recommendations and they can be ignored. That doesn't solve the problem. In fact, it just deepens the difficulty that we're in. I think that the conditions that we're under at this time are very difficult to address. But I think the responsible act is to address and use those recommendations given to us by experts within the field that are not only looking just at us, but have an opportunity to look at the health programs throughout the state of California to assist us in what would be best or how we could possibly address our losses. Because if we do not address it, and if we are not going to be responsible in addressing these losses, we're going to end up without having any health program. And that, I think, is irresponsible. And that's the situation that we're caught in. It's not a pleasant position to be in. But I believe it is our responsibility to make sure that we have continued health services in Stanislaus County
rather than to continue to ignore it and continue on the service which I hear you say you believe has been good service. But at this point, we can't afford to do that anymore. And for us to say we're going to continue with it, and then all of a sudden in a year or two, just turn around and say there will be no longer health service in Stanislaus County, that's not being responsible. So those are the choices that we have. They are not easy choices. But I do believe being responsible, we're going to have to address this with the recommendations that have been made.
Supervisor DeMartini?
I also would like to concur with Supervisor Monteith. His sentiments are very similar to mine. This board is in the position that we really don't like to be in. We're faced with staggering losses of the healthcare system. And with the help of our staff and the consultants we've hired, we've come up with various recommendations to reduce the loss. And this is not going to eliminate the loss. We're going to have that forever, but the $16 million loss a year is just beyond what we can handle in this county. And unless we make some adjustments to the program, we will not be able to preserve the system that we have. And it is a good system, and the recommendations are reasonable. I don't think anybody is adversely impacted, and I believe it's a minimum disruption to patient care. These adjustments, as much as we don't like to make any cuts or any changes to the system, are necessary for the long-term viability of our healthcare system and our clinic system. We still maintain the locations. We still have the residency program. We have pretty much everything that we had in the past outside of these changes in hours and a little bit of staffing and radiology and laboratories. But as Supervisor Monteith said, we cannot responsibly ignore the problem that we have with this department and the staggering losses that we've had. So I'm going to today support the staff recommendations because of these reasons.
Well, I'm one of the ones that sit on the Health Services Committee, and as we went through this and we talked about what we wanted to save, years ago we started the clinic system. We brought the services to the people. That's what we did. Now we're to the point that if we're going to save the clinic system, these are things we're going to have to do if we're going to save it. Because it wasn't too long ago, which was going to go, the clinic system or something else? So as of tonight, I'm going to approve what staff wants to do. And I think this is a way to save the clinic system and to move ahead and at least have some kind of health care in the county.
I would agree with all the supervisors here tonight that state we have to do something in order to save the whole system. Personally, with the many doctors I've had personally in Stanislaus County, most of the doctors, at the end of the doctor visit, gives you the form to go visit a lab to get your blood drawn and have a lab work done. I haven't had too many doctors in my lifetime where they've taken the blood right there in the doctor's office. I usually have to go and visit a second location here in the county. I'm a firm believer that private industry can do things much more efficient than government. Here we have private labs throughout Stanislaus County that are can be much more efficient than government. And it's nothing against the dedicated employees that we have here at the county. It's just government in general. You take any aspect of government, and that's what I believe in. It's very difficult to make these decisions, especially when it affects two groups of people. One, our employees, and two, the public that we provide service to. I will ask that before the services are terminated, that whoever we contract with for lab services, and specifically for oncology, that the doctors get the results in the time frame that they need. and I know we can make that part of the RFP process. That's something I don't have much knowledge of, so I want to make sure that the care is absolutely there. At this point, I will entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Motion by Supervisor Mayfield, second by Supervisor Monteith. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 4-0.
Yep.
Moving on to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the Federal Emergency Management Agency regarding the preliminary partial flood insurance study report and accompanying flood insurance rate map for the unincorporated areas of Stanislaus County, directing the county to distribute the report to appropriate community officials.
Refer to Department of Public Works, Planning and Community Development, and the Chief Executive Office, Office of Emergency Services.
This board has received a second letter from the Federal Emergency Management Agency regarding the revisions to the flood insurance study report and flood insurance rate map of the unincorporated areas of Stanislaus County, which are to be used for floodplain management purposes and for all flood insurance policies and renewals issued.
Refer to Department of Public Works, Planning and Community Development, and Chief Executive Office, Office of...
Mr. Chairman, let me mention that just a second. This county has always had a policy that you don't build on the floodplain, okay, for quite a while. So, I mean, how many people are we talking about that would fall under this if they want to build on a floodplain that they're worried about their insurance?
If I know what letter this is, I think it has to do with
the levees.
Mm-hmm. And FEMA has decided something about the levees that... And we need staff to look at this. That's why we need to refer it over to public works so they have a true understanding of what this letter means. But it has something to do with FEMA changing designation on some levees we have in the county.
Well, I don't think the county has to worry too much about it. Quite truthfully, if we just keep continuing the policy, we don't let them build on floodplains. Or if they do, they have to build it high enough so they would be above the high water mark.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I agree with you, sir.
This board has received a letter from the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection regarding a 15-day notice for public comment on the modifications to proposed regulations for fire hazard severity zones 2007.
Refer to Chief Executive Office of Emergency Services.
This board has received a notice from the State of California Fish and Game Commission of proposed regulatory action relative to methods authorized for taking big game, non-game birds, and non-game mammals.
Refer to Department of Parks and Recreation and the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports? At this point, this meeting is adjourned.